commission for town of Fairfield for August 26th of 2026. First item of business will be roll call.
Kyler here.
David here.
Jamie here.
Wayne here, and Kelton will join us as he can. He's not there yet, but he's stuck in traffic. Okay. First item on business items is consider approval of the July 29th of 26 minutes. Meeting minutes. Any comments? Okay.
That's good.
All right, I will take a motion then.
I'll make a motion to pass the July 29th, 26th meeting minutes.
I'll second it.
Okay, there's been a motion and a second.
Kyler, yes.
David, yes.
Jamie, yes.
Wayne, yes. Motion carries. Item number two is update from the Oakwood Ranch people. Are you up there, Jared? You got... There you are.
I'm here. Thank you, guys.
Okay, go ahead.
So we are just working away, and we're working on the packet based off of our discussions, as well as we're seeking input from several industrial users to make sure that we've got the packet sharp and it'll work when they come to apply and help. And we're just not ready to present it again, but that's our update. We're working really hard on it and hope to have it to you in the next 30 days or so.
Okay.
Do you guys have any questions for me?
I don't at this time.
Anybody have any comments after reading those packets?
I didn't have to see anything major.
They're pretty free in the commercial zone with ability to do what they want, but
energy facilities was going to be an allowed use. Have we got any idea what kind of energy facilities we're talking about? It's pretty broad spectrum.
Yeah, we are going to sharpen that up. We do believe there'll be a natural gas facility and possibly an advanced fission or fusion. I'm going to get the one right. The one that doesn't, the one that's liquid cooled and is really safe. I'm sorry, I forget the right terminology, but that's part of what we'll do in this package is we'll add a lot of detail around that so it's not so general.
Okay. We just got to be, aware that we don't have a lot of extra water for a large scale facility that could create a problem.
Jared, did you buy a little bit of the old salt farm water? Did you guys come up with a bunch of
We do have a bunch of that water.
Okay.
And I apologize, I forgot that I've been asked now twice to get the water right numbers to you, and I will get that done.
Well, it would just speed up the process when you get to the point where you want to go, right? When it's already been checked, you don't have to wait at that point, so. Okay, we're good.
Yeah, we'll get those water right numbers to you so they can be reviewed, and if we can, we'll bank them.
Okay.
I noticed another thing that we had kind of listed in here was data centers is allowed use. Are we restricting that to a closed loop system where we're not using a bunch of water, or what are we looking at there?
Yes, we would want that to be a closed loop system.
Air cool, closed loop.
We do not want the high water use that you see in that.
We don't want to see cooling towers out there wasting water.
Correct. The only towers we want to see is if it's using air to cool.
Right.
Is that the major concern? Is that the major concern?
The air would use more power, but the water obviously we don't have, so the air cool is about the only thing we can do, and it might be a closed loop system where they run circulated water through towers that are air cooled. typically how they do it.
We can chat about that more later.
Yeah. See if there's any.
Total agreement on that, and we can write that into the code.
Yeah, I mean, there's just some pretty broad verbiage there for allowed uses, and we're probably going to need to get a lot more specific as to what things we are and won't allow when it comes to those type of industries.
Does anybody have any comments on the residential 1 and 3 acre lots? The number of head of animals per lot was a concern among, as we've talked one-on-one outside of this, or at least me and Kyler.
Felt like it's pretty high.
So yeah, that might, you might want to sharpen your pencil on that a little bit, but
okay.
I don't know that like an acre's gonna hold 8 head of critters. That'd be a miniature feedlot, I think. But we're not above talking about it for sure, but we just felt like some of the numbers were high, at least telling Kyler and I.
When we talked about it last time, we discussed the fact that on the 1 acres, they're going to all be stalls in a barn and something like that.
No, so I didn't. That's what I was wondering. That's what I told him.
Restrictions on how you're not going to pass your 8 acres
to the,
on an acre.
No, you're not.
But if they're stalled and cleaned up after, that's a different story.
Yeah, because is it like you can have all of that? Because that's a lot for 1 acre.
I think you'd have to pick your poison, but those are the things we need to narrow down. It's all good. We'll just move forward with it. We'll work together and move forward, and we'll get it done. Any other comments? You got any more comments?
Appreciate you guys identifying some issues that we can tighten up.
Okay. Well, thanks. We appreciate it. We'll move on to item number 3. Presentation by James Braun regarding the conditional use permit ordinance.
Thanks, Jared.
Yeah, thank you, Jared.
Thank you.
So,
all right.
Just before you start, we did a notice of intent. Are we going to go over that, Jim? Were you going to go over the notice of intent? Okay, then go ahead.
Can you share on your screen?
Let me go ahead and share my screen here. Okay.
Yep.
Okay, perfect. So I'm getting some feedback in there. Is there audio coming in through someone's computer?
Everybody got their audio off? I'm not connected to the meeting.
Yeah, just a mute if
not either.
You're locked in on the video. So as a little context, this past March, the town council approved an ordinance establishing a moratorium on conditional use permits. And said that basically said that the town is taking pause on accepting any new applications so that the town has time to update and review the existing ordinances. So in a couple of weeks, around September 8th, we have scheduled a public hearing to review the conditional use updates that will be in the code, but tonight we're really just going to go through what conditional uses are and the general framework for how we review them. And then that will help set the stage for September when we dive a little bit deeper into the specific ordinances for Fairfield. I'm still getting some feedback. Is everybody waiting there?
Could it be yours, Stephanie?
All right, give us half a minute.
Nobody has their mic on.
Okay, sure.
I don't think I have a mic.
You do, but you're not connected.
Either.
We're not connected to the meeting, so.
The only one that shows is Stephanie's and Jim's.
Yeah, so Paul is muted on.
Everyone else is muted,
okay.
So.
Is that better, Jim?
Yeah, it's just when I talk, there's like a 1 second lag, and then I can hear myself. Speaking in there, so it may be coming through and then getting picked up on your microphone. We'll keep going. All right, so tonight we're going to talk about what we can do to make consistent and defensible decisions with regard to conditional uses. So most of the information I pulled out is from this guide here, the Utah Land Use Institute. It's a great organization, and this article is called The Law and Practices of Conditional Uses. Craig Paul is actually, he's one of the leading experts with land use law in Utah. He was the property rights ombudsman for a very long time. He also was a professor at the University of Utah and is one of the co-founders of the Utah Land Use Institute. He's written several books on specific land use law in Utah. So I actually saved the link and uploaded this into the packet folder. So after the meeting, maybe Stephanie can send that out to everybody just so you have a copy of this book. But most everything we're going to review is from this guide here, which was updated a couple of months ago. So tonight we're going to talk about why is a conditional use different, what the Planning Commission's role is with the conditional use review, what constitutes substantial evidence, which gets into some of the legal framework for conditional use, when conditions are appropriate, and then when can a CUP be denied. And we'll go through a case study as well that highlights that. So generally in code, there's three different types of uses. A permitted use, which as you all know, it's just a permitted use. If you're wanting to develop a property that's a permitted use, generally you just have to submit a building permit or a subdivision application. You don't have to get special permission from the Planning Commission or Council to operate or have that specific thing. So an example of that is if you have a residential zone to build a house, generally you just submit either the subdivision to create the lot or the building permit to build the house. You don't have to ask if you can have a house there because it's just allowed. Any permitted use has to comply with applicable standards that are already in the code. Special uses are similar, and really a special use in Fairfield just says this use is allowed, but there's special rules that you have to follow in order to have it. A conditional use is a little different because it's allowed, but there might be characteristics specific to that land use that would require mitigation. And we'll talk more about what that means. But that's really the caveat is a conditional use is more of a case-by-case analysis where permitted use or special use aren't necessarily that. And then prohibited is just it's just not allowed, right? The code says it's not allowed. So one thing that Utah code specifies that conditional use is really an allowed use or permitted use. It's not requesting a change in the zoning because the code already identifies it as a conditional use. The legislative body or the town council, when they approve the code, are the ones that determine what land uses are allowed in what districts and what level of permission they receive. So a conditional use is an administrative decision, meaning that it's not changing the law, it's simply applying the code to allow for something that's already identified in the code. So it's not answering the question, do we want this business or land use here? It's really what reasonably anticipated detrimental impacts are relevant under our current code, and can those conditions be substantially mitigated? An example of that is, let's say you have a dog kennel that's a conditional use in a residential zone. The question isn't, do we want this dog kennel to operate here? Because that was already decided when we adopted the code saying it was a conditional use in that zone. The questions really at that point are, is this specific operation, the applicant, are there detrimental impacts that are going to be associated with this business that are going to be harmful to the community? And if the answer is yes, the Planning Commission will then ask, okay, well, what can we do to help minimize those negative impacts? And we'll go through a few examples a little bit later. So again, you're applying what the code says, you're not rewriting what the code says with the conditional use review. This is important to understand because at the public hearing in September, what the Planning Commission will review is writing the code, right? So we're actually writing the rules that will then be applied to the conditional use process. And then the town council will adopt the code that will then regulate conditional uses in the future. So I mentioned this earlier, so the Utah code, and this is language from that section. It says a conditional use shall be approved when reasonable or can be imposed to mitigate reasonably anticipated detrimental effects in accordance with applicable standards. And the applicable standards is the important part. The conditions have to already be referenced somewhere in the town's code in order to be reasonably imposed. So again, the important distinction here is that the conditions that are imposed mitigate, they don't have to eliminate the concern. So going back to that kennel example, if noise is a concern, it could be reasonable that the planning commission say, you know, for interior boarding areas, you know, soundproofing or other sound dampening materials have to be installed to minimize the noise, but you don't have to eliminate the noise impact. And then, let's see, practical rule, if reasonable conditions can substantially mitigate the relevant detrimental effects, again, you have to approve that use. So, really in a nutshell, the ordinance is a rule book, so that the commission applies the adopted standards. So things that you should do is identify, you know, what the standards are, right? So what does the code actually say? What does the code say that the review criteria are? How do we connect any findings or evidence to the standards that are already in the code? And then how do we apply the code consistently? So you can't play favoritism with this kind of stuff. It should be a very objective, you know, this person is applying for this thing, this is the information in the data, it either does or doesn't, you know, meet the standard, and then, you know, there are or aren't conditions. So what you shouldn't do is invent new approval criteria to say, well, I think we should consider this when the code doesn't necessarily reference that specific thing. You can't impose personal preferences, which is tough to do. You know, you can't have unrelated concerns as a bias for condition, or basis for conditions. And then you can't ignore mandatory ordinance requirements. So if the code says something, you have to follow what the code says. That's the general framework for a conditional use review. So an important part is identifying what substantial evidence is. And you can kind of treat this as like you're the jury in a court case. Generally, if someone's prosecuted or convicted of something, there's substantial evidence that backs whatever it is that they did or didn't do that would inform the guilty or not guilty plea. The same thing applies with the conditional use application. There has to be substantial evidence to support whatever decision is made. That evidence can be any of these things listed here, as well as other information that is collected or required by the town's ordinances. So any application materials, the site plan, traffic or parking information, so that could be a traffic study, parking manuals published by professionals, photographs, any other studies, staff analysis, credible testimony, other documents. So really any information that's relevant can be presented, and that information can be used in making an informed decision. One thing you shouldn't do is speculate, right? Anything that might be a detrimental effect should be supported by the evidence, not simply an assumption or an unfounded apprehension. So you can't just say, well, we think this might cause X, Y, Z. If the evidence doesn't show that X, Y, Z is being paused, then it's difficult for the planning commission to make that assumption. One example that I can share recently actually is a community that I worked for received an application for a convenience store. And, you know, based on what the applicant was providing, it looked a lot like a tobacco and smoke shop. But they technically met the letter of the law in limiting the percentage of the area of the store that was used to sell tobacco. And some of the planning commissioners were concerned, saying if we issue this conditional use, we're afraid that they're gonna just, you know, convert half the store into a tobacco store and then it's gonna become some compliance issue down the road. And as a planning staff, I told them, well, we can't make that assumption because that's not what they're presenting to us. They're presenting that we're gonna have 10% of the store tobacco, which complies with the convenience store regulation. We can't deny their application based on an assumption that they're going to, in the future, break the law. So that gets hard to do because a lot of times you're giving people the benefit of the doubt and having to rely then on the enforcement down the road. But if you were to deny something based on an assumption, that would be pulled up in court if they were to file an appeal. And as I'm going, if you guys have questions, feel free to stop me. I've got about 12 slides I think total, and then we'll open it up for questions at the end. So one important thing to balance is how do we consider public comment versus evidence? And this is a really controversial topic, especially in Utah. I think most communities have steered away from having a public hearing in association with conditional use, but a lot of times it's still a good idea, and I'll explain here why. So public opposition by itself is not enough to say that you can deny a project. So if someone, you know, goes up to the dais and says, you know, we don't want this here, you know, this will ruin the neighborhood, we oppose the project, you know, by a show of hands, who hates this proposal? You know, those types of things isn't substantial evidence. We call it a public clamor, and that can't be the basis for simply saying, you know, based on the feedback, nobody wants this, so we're going to tell you no. However, some things that could be helpful and could be used as evidence is that people come to the meeting and they have photographs documenting some existing condition, or they have specific observations. If they measure something or have other information that's relevant and credible, expert testimony, just like in the courts, that's considered evidence, and then any other factual information. So the key there is that it has to be factual and evidence-based, not purely emotional from the public. So one important thing that actually several times in my career I've come to realize is that the public does have the ability to raise concerns that maybe the staff or the planning commission hasn't thought about. And then in the meeting, at that point, it's up to the staff and the planning commission and the legal counsel to determine if whatever concern is raised is actually legitimate. And as a note, there have been several instances where the courts have rejected a conditional use decision because the decision was based solely on opposition from the public. And that's generally where the town or city will say, no, we don't approve this. They appeal it, and then the appeals courts say, well, you don't have any substantial evidence backing your claim. You were just solely basing your decision on what the public told you, not any evidence that's not real. So here's an example. So if there's a conditional use for a restaurant, you know, someone may complain, the restaurant would be too noisy, okay? So that's a legitimate concern, but this walks through the analysis of what, you know, how the town could approach that comment and result in some type of a condition. So one, does the ordinance allow for consideration of noise in the code? Most codes do. You know, what specific noise impact is reasonably anticipated? This is an important one because if a town allows a restaurant in a zone, generally you're accepting the types of impacts that already come with the restaurant, right? If someone said, we don't want people visiting this property, you know, it's like, well, then you probably shouldn't have a zone for a restaurant. That's the whole point, right? So what level of noise is appropriate for a restaurant in that zone to begin with? Number three, what evidence supports that conclusion? So maybe someone says, you know, this business applicant is proposing to have live music on a rooftop patio during these times. You know, that's a very specific thing that would create more noise than a typical restaurant would anywhere else. Number four is mitigation. So what conditions would substantially mitigate that impact? So if they have live music on the rooftop, you know, maybe a condition that the planning commission could impose to say, okay, well, we get that that will create noise and that is an impact. To address that, we'll limit outdoor music to only be allowed before 10 p.m., right? So that's a very specific objective standard that can be measured but also enforced down the road. So it's not necessarily saying that they can't have outdoor music. It's simply saying, you know, they have to abide by the noise ordinance and turn it off by 10 p.m. So that's a pretty good example of how the thought process works with creating a condition for a conditional use. So again, what makes a good condition? So it has to be appropriate, so the town has to be able to regulate that specific thing. It has to be relevant, proportionate to what the impact is, and then it also has to be reasonable, right? And noise is a big one that comes up quite a bit. This was pretty common in a lot of communities with a ton of car wash land uses. You know, after you get your car washed, but as you're exiting, they have a really loud blower motors. You know, those are really noisy. And if you live by one of those, it'd be pretty annoying every like 30 seconds or minute to have those blowers kicking on and creating that noise. So that's something that, again, would be a legitimate concern. So it's really important to avoid vague conditions, and this is stuff that the staff will help you with as we review the applications. We'll draft a list of conditions that we think are defensible and clear. So instead of saying that, you know, minimize impacts on neighbors, going back to this example, say, you know, outdoor amplified music has to be turned off by 10 p.m. That's a very specific, measurable requirement. So when can a conditional use permit be denied? And it's not very common that you'd reach that conclusion, but there are instances where it would be appropriate. And you know, this decision tree helps you get to that conclusion. So are there reasonably anticipated detrimental effects? Say yes, there are. Is it addressed by an applicable ordinance standard? So does the code allow us to regulate or minimize that detrimental effect? If it's yes, then, you know, is that effect supported by substantial evidence? So do we have evidence explaining to us that that concern is legitimate? If it's yes, the last question is, can the planning commission or the jurisdiction reasonably mitigate the effect, not necessarily eliminating the effect? And if the answer is yes, then you have to approve it with whatever conditions would satisfy that requirement. If at any of these times you say no, a denial might be appropriate, but again, you can't deny something simply because the neighbors prefer that they don't want that land use. So, it's, I don't know if in my career, actually, I have seen conditional uses denied before. It's generally because, in my experience at least, that the applicant hasn't demonstrated that they can fully comply with the adopted ordinances or standards. Or I have had cases where, you know, there's nothing that could be done to mitigate an effect, and I can give you an example. So in a community, as a home occupation, this town or city allowed home daycares to operate, and they would allow up to 16 children to be in a home daycare based on the state code, and it was a conditional use, so we went to a public hearing with the planning commission. A lot of neighbors showed up expressing their concerns about this daycare, saying it's going to have a lot of noise during the day, the traffic concerns with, you know, the a.m., the morning and evening peak hours, and one of the big concerns is that this specific property was located on a private street that was pretty narrow, and to get into that neighborhood, you had to go over a narrow bridge over a canal. And you know, the city ultimately determined that the access and the infrastructure getting to that property was not sufficient to accommodate that number of vehicles and trips for that business. And I can't remember if they just denied the use. I think what happened is they ultimately said, we'll approve your daycare, but we have to limit you to 6 or 8 children. We can't have up to 16, just to minimize the traffic impacts. So that's a real world example of how this, you know, decision tree comes into effect. And if for some reason, you know, the fire marshal or someone said, you know, we don't recommend that anyone be going in there for safety reasons, again, that would be grounds for denial. The caveat there is that you would have to have the evidence or an expert explaining why. You can't just make that assumption and say no. You've got to have the reasons that would hold up in the courts as to why. So we're going to run through a quick case study, and then I'll open it up for questions. So this was back in 2023. Kilgore Companies, it was an asphalt batch plant in Benjamin, Utah, so down by Spanish Fort. It was an existing asphalt plant. It was permitted use in the mining and grazing zone, so it was already there. That zoning district allows structures up to 40 feet tall as a permitted use. Anything taller than that required a conditional use permit. So Kilgore, the property owner, had previously received approvals for three 100-foot silos and two 65-foot silos. And this specific application was requesting approval for two additional 65-foot silos. So the conditional use was reviewing only the additional 25 feet of height, because remember, structures up to 40 feet are already allowed, right? So the conditional use is specific to increasing that height. The question here is, what detrimental effects, if any, would result from allowing the silos to be 65 feet rather than 40 feet, which is permitted, right? So that's the question. And we'll talk through and see what actually happened. So here's the aerial image of the site. It's in a pretty remote area, but there are some houses sort of in the vicinity. At the public hearing, you know, a lot of residents showed up and raised significant concerns. They said dust and air emissions are going to result. Truck traffic, road safety, light pollution, smoke and odors, health impacts. It's going to affect my property values. You know, do these things sound familiar? I feel like every public hearing anywhere, these are the bingo card for conditional use reviews. So that's what they were saying. One homeowner said that a realtor told him his property value was probably going to be cut in half, and then others stated that they would not have purchased their homes had they known the plant would, how the plant would operate. Right. So these are all things that the Planning Commission and the staff are hearing at the public hearing. The board's concern is, you know, regarding the testimony, you know, there's a lot of legitimate concerns that people are upset, they're emotional. Really, we have to ask the question, are these impacts and concerns caused by the asphalt plant generally, or the additional 25 feet of the silo height, which is really the question. And that's a really important distinction, because the conditional use was strictly for the additional height, not whether the plant should be there and operating. So as part of that review, the planning staff prepared a report. They recommended approval of the application. Staff concluded the application complied with the ordinances, and now the analysis should focus on the height of the silos, not the impact associated with the already permitted operation of the plant, which is what we just talked about. Regarding the property values, so Kilgore submitted a professional appraisal concluding the additional silos would have an inconsequential visual impact because the site already contained three 100-foot silos. Again, we're weighing the merits of what the request is, not necessarily what's been approved in there already. As far as the operations go, Kilgore's representative testified that the increased height silos would not increase production or capacity. It would have no impact on traffic noise or emissions beyond what they're already experiencing. They could easily achieve the same capacity by constructing more 40-foot silos, and so that was an option. And then the taller silos actually would reduce the material movement in outside storage areas, just from an efficiency standpoint. So in the courts, they viewed this testimony as competent, credible, and uncontradicted testimony. So again, it was legitimate evidence from an expert witness. Air quality, again, Fillmore said that the evidence from the Division of Air Quality, they inspected the facility and said it was doing really well, whatever that means. And then the Planning Commission or the Board's findings, after they considered the evidence and the public testimony, they concluded the additional height degraded adjacent property values, additional taller silos would continue that degradation, and that Kilgore had not shown that the application would not degrade public health, safety, or welfare. So that's what the Planning Commission or the Board decided, you know, after reviewing all the evidence and the public hearing. Kilgore appealed that decision to the District Court, and the District Court overturned the denial. So they basically said, Utah County, you're wrong, you got the decision wrong, we're going to overturn your denial and say that it's approved. Utah County then appealed that to the Utah Court of Appeals, and that was upheld. So what we can learn from that is the evidence didn't match the application, right? So they were focusing on the wrong thing. The conditional use was for the additional height, not evaluating the existing plant or its operations. There was no causal connection with evidence saying that the concerns, traffic dust emissions, odors, etc., was created because of the taller silos. So that was not a legitimate concern. The competent evidence, as I mentioned, supported field work. So they had the planning staff recommended approval, the professional appraisal, and the company experts testified based on their experience. So what we learned from this is that the public concern does not equal substantial evidence, and we talked about that quite a bit already. So, so that's a real-world case study of how conditional uses can get places into trouble when you start considering the public clamor and the emotion behind the decision, because it's not popular, and it is frustrating for residents when they go to a public hearing. A lot of people go and say, well, I don't even know why I'm here, it's a waste of time, they've already made their decision. The way I like to frame a public hearing is letting the residents know, you know, we invited you to this public hearing, and your opinion matters because there may be things that we're not seeing. Please help us understand what types of impacts could be created by this business that we can legitimately address that in the end will hopefully be a win-win for everybody. So the key takeaway there is, you know, the detrimental effects must be tied to the specific application and not simply to the existing use or operation specific to that case study. So last slide here. So these five rules start with what the code says, you know, what has actually been adopted in the code, which is what we're going to review in September. What detrimental effects, you know, are reasonably anticipated by whatever application is coming before you. What evidence supports that the conclusions that you're reaching, and then based on that information, how could the town mitigate any negative impacts to address the concerns? And then at the end, you have to then be able to explain your decision, whether it's for or against, with evidence, findings, and conditions on the record. And these are all things that professional staff would help walk you through. So it's just really important that you understand the legal framework behind a conditional use permit and why the staff reviews things the way they do, so that we stay out of trouble with appeals and courts and things like that. So again, to recap, planning commission should be able to explain, this is the standard, this is the evidence, this is the impact, and this is how this condition addresses that impact in a very clear and factual way. So that's everything in a nutshell. That was probably really quick, but I wanted to see if you have any questions, concerns, thoughts. That was a conditional use 101 on steroids.
I appreciate the report.
I think you'll have to unmute.
We'll hang on, you're muted there, sir.
There you go, there you go.
We appreciate the report, Jim.
Yeah, thank you, sir.
I mean, as you've probably seen, as we were a small town, we're growing, we've had ordinances we thought were good and felt were good, but under major scrutiny, they're not as good as we'd like them to be. So we appreciate you helping
sure.
us do this.
I just want to give them like a standing ovation, you know?
Right.
That's amazing.
The relief of having a professional that's seen some of this stuff before is measurable.
Yeah, absolutely.
Anybody got any questions, concerns, or comments they want to make to Jim?
So I guess just to give you a little segue into September, so when we come back and actually review what the code says, keep all this stuff in mind because it's important to anticipate the things that might come up with the specific land uses that you have addressed. As conditional uses in the code. So we just want to make sure that whatever the town may or may not want to do is authorized in this new code, and that when you review something, there's objective criteria that you can say, you know, you know, for a specific use, that you have to submit a specific study so that we have the evidence to back whatever decision we make. So this is helpful as a to prepare you to know what the code should address with these types of uses. And these are things that will obviously help you with, and I'll work with Brad and the council. But the goal is to tighten up the code so that this process and workflow is a lot more seamless.
Okay, so the way this is looking like it's going, they're going through the legal review with Brad and tidying this up, and they'll get this document to us hopefully. If you look at your calendars, if we have a work meeting on the 3rd of September.
That's a Thursday.
Excuse me, 2nd of September. I wasn't there yet. Okay, so if we have a work meeting on the 2nd of September, we'll hopefully have this document a day to 2 days before that. I know it's not a lot. And hopefully it's not too long of a document, we can get through it. But then we can still go over the bullet points of whatever the highlights Jim has. We can ask our questions that night.
Can we do it Tuesday the 1st instead? I have a ball game on Wednesday and Thursday. Is there a reason?
This is all, it's up to us. It's whatever conflicts with
I mean,
whatever.
I can get on Zoom, but.
You'd rather be here?
Yeah, I'd rather be here.
Anybody have any problems with Tuesday?
Or even Thursday.
So Wednesday would be better for me. I have a ball game on the.
My ball game is more important than your ball game.
Football is way more important.
On wrestling.
This is baseball.
Kelton can't come on Thursday either.
He can't come on Thursday?
What day is better
so
for
we're
you?
Tuesday or Wednesday?
Tuesday or Wednesday? Tuesday, please. Does that work for you or no? I'm sorry, did you say Tuesday didn't work?
Yeah, so 9-1, right? Tuesday, I have a ball game at 8 o'clock at Westlake.
You all right, we go with Wednesday, and you can, because baseball's quieter most of the time. If we hear a crazy little crowd noise,
well, the game doesn't start till 8:15, so that's fine.
You can do it earlier, as long as, well, traffic should be over by 7, so.
I'll be with you today.
You guys want to do it earlier? Okay, so we're going to have a motion on this. So September 2nd, work meeting.
That was our normally scheduled one anyway, wasn't it?
Well, we moved into the fourth week.
Yeah, so that was what was on our old calendar. Was
right. So then, don't be confusing my calendars, Dave. It's easy. So, because this is a time-sensitive issue and the town council has to, this has to be approved by like the 20th of September or something. So, say that again. So what I would like to do is not give it to them the week of, like that, but if you can all find it in your hearts to have a meeting on the 8th of September. It will be a public hearing. We'll have to vote to notice that, so we have enough time to notice that. Have it on the night of the 8th.
I'm good.
And it's the day after Labor Day. I don't.
It's a Tuesday, right?
Yeah.
It's Tuesday.
After Labor Day.
That works.
But we want to do it on Tuesday because the council has their meeting on Wednesday, the 9th. And if they have some kind of, for some reason, have a hiccup, we're going to leave them a week's grace to gather up and redo if it comes to that. But I don't think, I hope it won't, but we're not going to put ourselves right to the last minute if we can help them. So,
it works.
So we're going to go with September 8th, is that what it said?
Yep. And then we'll do a work session on the 2nd.
Yeah.
It's all at 7 p.m.
Yep. You want to do that? You want me to try it?
No, fine.
You can say so moved.
But this is just going to be called a work session?
Well, the 2nd will be a work session, and the 8th will be a public hearing.
Okay, so...
Make a motion.
I'll make a motion to have a work session on September 2nd at 7 p.m. And then I make a motion to have a public hearing for, regarding the conditional use permanent ordinance on September 8th at 7:00.
We've had a motion.
I'll second it.
There's been a motion and a second. All in favor?
Kyler, yes. David, yes.
Jamie, yes.
Wayne, yes. That carries. I appreciate your willingness to, it seems like we catch ourselves getting in these more than we care to, but we'll just have to be more diligent about it in the future. And if there's nothing pressing, we can probably scrub the meeting at the end of the month. We'll see how that goes. I'm not going to guarantee it, but it's a possibility if nobody comes to the table with something important. Okay. Write this down before I forget. Second. Okay. And the last item on the agenda was, and this is basically a discussion between us and Jim about, we've talked about the wildlife protection zone. We haven't come up with anything concrete or any real good plan or direction to move yet. We think it's needed. Between the wildlife protection zone and the agricultural protection area, there is some agricultural right to farm things in our ordinance already. I saw the other day, but I didn't take time at that time to read through all of it. So I'll do that beforehand. You have any suggestions on directions where we go to find the things we need to find to make this? We want to protect the eagles. I was telling you on the phone the other day how the one winter I saw 54 eagles down through there, and we haven't seen numbers like that in quite a while. So.
Well, eagles and hawks.
Yeah.
Hawks and big owls.
Owls.
We had a couple, yeah, I have owls big time at my house.
Nice.
Yeah.
I like owls.
Cool. Yeah.
They like my transformer. Until they don't.
Can you hear me?
Any thoughts, Jim?
No, I think we can chat more about it. I'll try to find some case studies and examples of other communities that have adopted similar types of easements or standards. So we'll do some research and come back with you with some ideas, and then you can brainstorm and see what makes sense for Fairfield. And
we'll take the 101 for that too.
Sorry, what was that?
we'll do the 101 for that one too. Like, you can help us out.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
And if in the meantime, if you have suggestions of assignments, call me. We'll try and look into it. We don't need to do an all the work, but we do express professional opinion very much.
Sure.
Okay. Any other comments, Jim?
That's everything I had, so unless you guys have questions.
Okay. Anybody have any questions for Jim or any other questions? We can't get too far into anything else because there's nothing else on our, we have to have it on the agenda to talk about it. If you ever want to talk about something, just talk about it. Call me, we'll put it on the agenda, we'll talk about it. I don't have any reason to continue with the fifth item being completed. So I'll take your favorite motion, Jamie.
Make a motion to adjourn.
I'll second it.
There's been a motion and a second.
Kyler, yes.
David, yes.
Jamie, yes.
Wayne, yes. We can bring our meeting to a conclusion at 7:49 p.m.
All right, thanks everybody.
Thank you,
Jim.
Thank you.
Please note, the session recording has stopped.
Did you guys have anything you...
Sorry, Jamie, what did baseball do? When
wanted to talk about or... I mean, you can talk. We can't do it in the meeting because...